5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
What a gorgeous gaggle of wayward children. Thank you.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 527 for the week of September 9th, 2024. I am grocery store banana David T. Cole, and I'm here with uncredited lighthouse Sarah D. Bunting.
Nauset Light Beaches.
Spike Green Juice Tara Ariano.
Vodka for fun.
And disappointing eldest child of a generationally wealthy family, Sonia Soraya.
I just played some pill roulette, you guys.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Before we get into this episode, it is time again to remind you, we have a Patreon. Please don't fast forward this. There's new information in it. Last week when we were off, you got to hear what a typical bonus episode sounds like when we brought our recently burn notice forcening out from behind the Patreon paywall. If you want to get a big chunky episode like that each and every Friday, and these are with marquee lead topics like The Bear, Interview with the Vampire, Mr. Throwback, Only Murders in the Building, Agatha All Along, The Insanity That Was Sugar, and many more, it is a mere $5 a month for you to get them. We are currently running a campaign to get members to join with milestones that we unlock at regular intervals. Right now, we are around $100 away from unlocking Cannon Fodder, in which we will add a canon segment to our bonus episodes on Fridays. This segment can include the long-discussed tiny canon for extremely niche concepts in television. Just last week, Dave and I were on vacation rewatching AP Bio. It occurred to me a fun tiny canon would be when characters on a TV show play each other. This is something that happens on AP Bio. We also talked about it with regard to Glow in that season 3 Christmas episode. But that's just one idea. You could bring us ideas for all kinds of crazy stuff if we hit that next milestone. When we also want to remind you, the last milestone that you unlocked was this month in historical TV. It's going to be a new bonus episode that will join 3 of these as a quarterly feature. We're going to be debuting this one in October. Thanks to your pledges, more details to come. So to get that Cannon Fodder milestone unlocked, all it takes is 21 listeners to part with $5 a month, or for 34 members who've been grandfathered in at the old $2 floor to convert their memberships and get full access, or some combination. The point is, it's not a lot. Either way, all of you could fit comfortably in a Zumba class, and listening to the podcast is more fun. If your budget does not permit joining or raising your pledge, we understand. We love that you're here on the free feed. We would love it even more if you shared our links on social media or tell your TV-loving friends about us. Just get the word out as part of the street team. It really makes a difference. But if you can join us, you get those big bonus episodes on Fridays. You'll get access to our Discord server, Wednesday episodes ad-free, the chance to put the most demented pics your mind can summon into the forcening pools to make us watch and discuss them. More exclusive opportunities, like, for example, the 25th anniversary of the launch of Mighty Big TV as Television Without Pity was originally called is coming up next week. We're going to be soliciting questions about the site from our Discord members. So if you get in there, you can ask whatever Television Without Pity questions have been on your mind all these decades. My God, plural. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support in whatever form it takes. Thank you for being you. We love you. And now the episode. Joining us, she is a writer and a critic. You've read in Vanity Fair and Salon and heard with us before. It's Sonia Soraya.
Hello.
Sonia.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for sitting through all that. everybody, Sonia and listeners. We are here to talk about The Perfect Couple, in which Central Park zoologist Amelia, Eve Hewson, is on Nantucket to get married to Benji, Billy Howell or Howley, I'm not actually sure. He is the scion of the old money Winbury family, and they are having all of these festivities at their estate, Summerland. Family matriarch Greer, Nicole Kidman, is icy and intimidating. Her husband Tag, Leo Schreiber, is checked out when he's not actively drunk and or high. But everyone's trying to have a good time at the rehearsal dinner despite all the secrets boiling over. Then someone turns up dead. Was it just a tragic accident or murder? It's murder. The show is based on Ellen Hildebrand's novel, was adapted by Jenna Lamia, formerly a consulting producer on Good Girls. Susanna Beer, who also directed The Night Manager and The Undoing, directed the episodes here as well. All six of which dropped on Netflix last week. We might talk about any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Sonia, should our listeners watch The Perfect Couple?
It's as good as anything else is on TV right now. Okay. I would say you could watch it. Yeah.
Sarah?
I mean, I will qualify it, but unqualified, yes. I watched the whole thing and regret nothing.
Dave?
When this title first appeared on our docket, I was convinced, and I had no reason to question myself, that this was another Netflix dating show.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And then when it turned out to be like A-list celebrities, I'm like, what the heck? And given the quality, the pedigree of everybody involved, I thought it was going to be catchier. And I wanted more of what I had in my mind, you know, rich people being bitches, and didn't really happen for me in that way. So I'm going to give it a qualified no.
One of our listeners, I mentioned this recently, but every Friday we do on our Instagram, a story where it's like, what are you watching this weekend? And someone said, I just had dental surgery and I already watched all of The Perfect Couple. If you had dental surgery, you need something to like wash over you that's like intermittently scandalous, this is the perfect thing. I'm like medium on it in terms of this category of show, but let's drill down. Let's get into it a little more. From Dynasty to Succession to the other Dynasty to this, bad things happening to rich people is a frequent subject on TV. What does a show with this premise have to do to hook you, Sonia?
All right. Well, The House was a really big sell. I think one of the things that was nice about watching this is that Nantucket is the type of place that you will like hear a lot about. Mm-hmm. If you are, you know, familiar with like the vacation habits of the very wealthy, but you don't necessarily see it on filmed so nicely. And they had beautiful vistas. You kind of got the impression of like what a sort of beautiful like oceanfront place it is. And then, or like, you know, it's an island, so it's all on the ocean, but you know what I mean, the coastline. Yep. And then also like the house itself, I'm looking at this house like this has got to be someone's like hotel or country club or something. Like it can't be a real house. But regardless, just having that incredible location, I think like if you're going to sort of to your point, if you're going to give me murder mystery, you're going to give me some sort of like rich people's, then I need to see the real estate to believe you. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty good to get some of those touches. I really think like Greer and Tag both have like personal spaces in the house that do feel like bonkers. you're like, oh, this is full of stuff. I think the location, all of those like little secluded coastlines for Megan Fahey's flashback conversations throughout the night. Mm-hmm. Megan Fahey basically lived five lives the night that she died. Merritt, like the Parkway, whatever her name is.
Uh-huh.
It was pretty ridiculous that in every single episode of The Six, there's like some new adventure she had that night, which mm-hmm. leads in, you know, anyway, sort of ridiculous, very White Lotus-y, but at least it gave me the real estate.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you have spent more time on Cape Cod than anyone here, I think. What were your feelings about the setting?
Like the minute I saw the quote home lighthouse that's like the closest to where we tend to go, I was like, oh, and then started Googling all the like location goss. And yeah, you do want them to show Nantucket. They didn't, but Chatham's nice too. Thumbs up.
Oh, that's not where it is?
It's
I was
close.
Lied to by the television?
If they're standing anywhere on that property, they could probably see Nantucket mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. France from there. I mean, the house is beautiful. I agree that you want it to look opulent and aspirational. And you also want to think to yourself, who is at their beautiful vacation house and wearing a $300 blouse to just like write in her study? Like, that just doesn't seem, although if I lived in that house, I would probably dress up to just like be in it. But I was getting revenge vibes from this. The show, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was successful because even when it showed a kind of fundamental failure to understand the way that time works for rich people surrounding a big event like this, and that certain things are not credible for a generationally wealthy family to be doing or caring about or not handling or whatever the case is, that it keeps moving. It was 6 episodes. Probably could have been 4, but wasn't 8 or 10. Thank you. And it understands that most of these people, even the ones that you're like putatively supposed to root for, are kind of hateful in different ways. Mm-hmm. And they have to make the hatefulosity of each one sort of distinct from all the other ones.
Yeah.
And I thought that they did a good job sort of making it interesting to look at. And then you have some, like, you have varying degrees of like villainy and eye roll inducingness.
Rich people alignment chart.
Yeah.
But not so much that you're like permanently repelled. I mean, I thought it was good. Like, there are parts of it that were actively bad. Nick Searcy trying to do a Massachusetts accent. Somebody needs to be arrested. That was so bad. I just got finished watching him in Justified. I wanted to claw my ears off. But it's also like, it knows what it is. It's not trying to necessarily be this like overarching comment on the 1%. It's just like, this is a sort of gossipy murder mystery, and that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And here's a $300 blouse that you don't understand. Enjoy.
I wanted everybody to be more of what they were on screen. Like, I wanted the rich people to be even snobbier and wanted to be more arch, I guess, than they provided. But then I just realized what I really want, and they got like little shades of it with the head maid or whatever you call her that was in the interrogation room. And
Gosha.
You know, just, yeah.
Gosha.
Go-go.
What I wanted was this premise, but in the Downton Abbey universe. The next movie should be a murder mystery movie that involves all the Crowleys.
Oh, yeah.
That's sort of what I wanted from this, and it didn't quite get there. Like, the characters were like, they were a little too grounded. I know that's a sort of a silly thing to say, but like, I wanted them to be more in the, like, an elastic reality universe where things can just go a little crazier or a little more far flung. And that's just like the only thing that can make me watch TV of this nature. Like, I just don't really care for murder mysteries that much as a genre, unless there is something bonkers about them or something delightfully stupid about them, like Downton Abbey. So if that was sort of where the disconnect was with me. I just like, oh, rich people doing rich people things, more please. So like dial it up more. That's sort of where it lost me.
And the crazy thing is that even though, like, Nicole Kidman keeps doing these, she did obviously Big Little Lies, which this is probably the closest to, and The Undoing, that awful show on HBO that we also talked about. We talked about all of them. And she would slot into the Downton universe so easily. It would be completely seamless. Like, everyone in that is already also wearing a crazy wig. Like, why not add her to the mix?
Sure. Oh, and God. I'm just going to say it. You know, like, they had that whole inheritance thing in the house in France from the Dowager Countess's one night stand with so-and-so.
Sure.
To do the same thing with somebody else in Australia.
Yeah.
Part of the Commonwealth. Yeah. We got it. Nicole Kidman doesn't have to go anywhere for a little while. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Case solved. Mm-hmm. Gavel, gavel.
Yes. We've already touched on it. We have the opening credits dance number. It makes a statement right away. Susanna Beer, who directed us, said, you know, she wanted to just communicate this is going to be a little more lighthearted than a lot of shows like this. I was here for it. I feel every show should do it. Leslie Linka-Glatter certainly makes a lot of shows like this and of all kinds. Like, I might have kept watching Love and Death if it had opened with one of these. She used to be a choreographer. She could do it. But anyway, I understand it was a controversial choice, including for the cast. Sarah, we'll go to you first. What were your feelings about it?
I thought it was delightful. I love that in the last episode, they do it again. And then behind the camera, staff is also in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's not great to, especially for something like this, to be complaining about doing it. Like, if you suck, they'll just shoot around you. Nicole, you're Nicole Kidman. It's fine. Also, what struck me in that article, though, you linked to an article and we'll put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. About the cast, except for Liev Schreiber being like, we don't want to.
Yeah.
And the director talking about, like, usually the locals will be won over. And, well, Chatham is a beautiful place. Like, I was like, oh, sure. Like, the fucking salty ass local. Then they're not even locals. They live in fucking Darien the rest of the year. And they're like, oh, I don't like these lights at 5 a.m. Like, the sun's already up. Get over it. Anyway, I thought the dance sequence, like, when I first saw it in the first episode, I was like, huh, I'm not sure this works, but I admire the brio. So I liked it. And I like that song, too, which I know I'm a basic, but...
I liked it, but I think it reveals a little bit of the show's like problem too. Like, like I did actually like the dance sequence. I thought it was I like Suzanne Beer. Am I saying it? Susanna? Am I saying it wrong? Susanna Beer. Okay, so I like Susanna Beer, and I love that she came out and did the dance in the last episode too. I think she has a point, because watching this, especially the first two episodes, I'd say, it's hard to tell that it's going to be sort of funny. A lot of the characters are playing it very straight. Nicole being Nicole, she can do anything and it sort of works. I'm genuinely in awe of her, like, having, you know, just tracked her career literally just in TV. She's done this type of show so many times.
Yeah.
But she has, maybe she's been the most evil she's ever been in this one. And she's not even that evil, but she gets to say some really, like, she gets to, like, glower and stuff. And so she's able to play with tone, right, with just her personality, just her persona. I mean, in a way that some of the other actors, like, that's just not their bag. Like, no offense to them, but, like, just to, like, you know, Eve Hewson is the actor that a lot of the plot is pinned on at the beginning, and I kind of got the impression from her that, like, this was a drama. Like, this is her rehearsal. There's, like, her mom is sick and, like, her friend is dead, and episodes, there's, like, a lot of close-ups on, like, not even just, like, on her face. It's, like, her eye. They're, yes. Like, looking at her eye. Uh-huh. I was like, I don't know exactly what's going on here, but her thing, it gets a little more fun, but it never quite resolves either, right? Like, she's with this guy, but then she's maybe feeling attracted to the other guy, and then it turns out she is attracted to the other guy, but then she's still attracted to her husband. And, like, it never quite lifts to, like, a amusement sort of level. But then, like, some of the other storylines, like Liev Schreiber, I wouldn't say that I, like, adored his character, because I thought there was some weird sort of inconsistencies that they were trying to have us all chalk up to him sort of being this stoned guy all the time. But I do sort of feel like they were playing a little bit. They were like, oh, no, he's happy she's pregnant. Oh, no, he's having a great time. He just wants to play pill roulette with his son or whatever it is. Like, there's always these moments of, like, we're all just having fun here. Mm-hmm. They had a little bit of trouble with finding some of the comedy. And I think probably that's why Susanna was like, let's just make it real clear and upfront. We're doing a choreographed dance. And yeah, really funny in that, in the opening shot, like, who gets close-ups and who doesn't. Uh-huh. who was into the dance and who wasn't into the dance. You can kind of tell.
Until I read the article, because I watched the show first and then read it and was like, wait, Liev Schreiber was the one who was into it? Because he seems like the worst at it, in my opinion.
He may have been really stoned the whole time, in his defense. And I just don't blame him either.
Yeah, you know, Jack Nicholson said playing the Joker, you know, he just let the makeup do the work. You know, it was like an easy gig. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like Liev Schreiber here is like, I just let the whiskey and the pot do the work. And it was easy peasy. And dancing just comes natural when you don't give a shit. Like, I don't
think. Yeah, it's true.
I don't think that was watered down Coke, you know, maybe.
Yeah. Mm. I agree that the tone was sort of hard to pin down. And depending on who you were watching in the moment, Donalyn Champlin, I think, definitely got what was happening. Yeah. She's the hero for sure, as Nikki, the detective. Wonderful.
So good.
Yeah, I agree that Eve Hewson, like, especially considering she sort of got the dramedy tone in Bad Sisters, which is not that long ago. I mean, less of it, obviously, there were five of them, was on her shoulders. But I think that she was definitely much more like dramatique here than what's really necessary. Like, it definitely could have stayed more arch. And there are touches where, like, in the first episode, we have a moment of Greer, the Nicole Kidman character, like, body shaming her soon-to-be daughter-in-law, like, making a rude remark about her eating carbs, like, the day before the wedding. Like, whatever's going to happen has already happened, first of all. Second of all, shut the fuck up. Like, it felt like gilding the lily sometimes. Whereas people like Dakota Fanning and Jack Rayner, who play the wife and then one of the other shitty sons,
disappointing elder sibling of a generationally wealthy family. Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard to tell who was who in the birth order. Honestly, all of the sons kind of seemed like they sucked. True.
No. Tara. You had the disappointing elder brother who played full roulette, and he was married to Dakota Fanning, who was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then you had the middle child, who was the sweet face, who was being cucked maybe a little bit by Eve Hewson. And then you had the younger guy who was just like messed up and had like a Seth Cohen moment with his boat. Yeah, right. That was turned out to be a French teacher thing going on there.
Right.
There was some interesting meat in there. I just could only think about Seth Cohen when the boat thing happened.
Yes.
I was like, oh, it's just like Seth Cohen in the OC. And then I kind of lost some of the details, too. But they were different, is what I'm trying to tell you.
You're right. That was played by a Nivola also. He's a Nepo baby. Mm-hmm.
Really?
The child of, now I can't remember her name, who was Mackenzie in The Newsroom. Oh. Did anyone else find it hard to invest in Amelia's love story when Benji, the middle child, is kind of a zero? Because in addition to the fact that, like, I would forget his name for long stretches at a time, that actor is also English, not doing an English accent and not really doing an American accent either. Like, he sounded like he was maybe supposed to be Dutch. Like, oh, he went to Deerfield and not somewhere in Europe. Okay, I don't know. He didn't do it for me, Sarah.
Is Deerfield in Acadia now?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was wild. Yeah.
He sounded lost. He, like, in a lot of the show, he just seemed a little bit, I liked him, but I think he's just giving innocence. I think that's what it was. He's like, how did I get here? What am I doing here? The people would be like, do you remember your French tutor who disappeared mysteriously? And he'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's like, where'd you come from, man?
Yeah, the show sometimes seemed to, like, if a given character was just like a catalyst or sort of like an impetus to move chess pieces, which he kind of was.
Yeah.
They didn't seem to care to, I don't know, give them other takes on lines or correct very bad die jobs. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he was kind of a zero, but I think sometimes this happens that, like, the people at the center of the plot that sort of like push you into the story are not nearly as interesting as Dakota Fanning, who is having a ball, almost 100% unalloyed territorial in-law bitch, but not totally. I don't know. I just really enjoyed that. And when finally Greer's, I don't know, you forget that Nicole Kidman like used to be fun. And then you rewatch Practical Magic, like you just dial past it on cable. And she's like, hold on to your husbands, ladies. And you're like, that's our girl. Because this, whatever she is doing with her beauty and maintenance regime is none of my business. Mixed reviews. But there has been a certain like prestigious, gelid quality to the roles that she picks. And when the big reveal about Greer finally happens, it's like, this doesn't really track with any of her behavior leading up to this point, in my opinion. But it's also like, oh, that's the Nicole role that I like. It's like, she'll slap you to death. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I liked that she was like the newer money, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Like that she married into the rich family. And I kind of wanted more of that because she's very, you know, it's like practically middle class. The fact that she has this like paperbacks profession, like she clearly mm-hmm. doesn't like need the money. So she's proving something, right? And then meanwhile, it's Tag's family and Tag's money, and Tag is useless, like literally like mm-hmm. so useless that he just keeps creating, problems. Like he, I mean, the whole plot line where he is, you know, not only having an affair with his middle son's maid of honor, I guess, but is also like happy she's pregnant. I kind of didn't buy it, you know, like but there were a bunch of things like that, like with Eve Hewson's character. Christ, I can't remember her name.
Amelia.
Oh, thank you. Amelia. Why doesn't Amelia run off with Shooter? Oddly named Shooter. Uh-huh. Why did they introduce that and then kind of like fizzle it? Like, it was almost like they didn't, they had like a half idea, but for some of these stories, and then didn't push it all the way through, mm-hmm. perhaps because of the format, but perhaps because they were just like, this is going to be shallow. Like, right. we're not mm-hmm. digging yeah, too deep into.
Yeah. Finding out that they did a 6-week shoot in 3 weeks because of the strikes also explains a lot.
Yeah.
That was interesting. I feel like we should close on Megan Fahey, the biggest star in this whole production, including bigger than Nicole Kidman, in my opinion. Like, she's the character we know the least about, but the one that I most was drawn to. And like the way that she's peppered through the show, especially after what happens to her in the premiere, it's like I was worried that that was going to be it for her. But like every moment she's on screen, she's so magnetic. That dress that Abby mm-hmm. says is that's not a dress, it's a bathing suit. Like, don't care. She looks incredible. Like, every time I saw her in it, it was like it was the first time. I just loved her so much. She's such a star. Megan Fahey Appreciation Club, go.
Yeah, no notes on your review. Mm-hmm. 5 stars for her, 5 stars for the use of her. I loved looking at her, and she also appeared to be having quite a bit of fun during the dance sequence, so credit there.
Good for her.
Yeah, she's so charismatic, and you actually got a sense of this character sort of outside of the story and the way that it was being decredibilitized for plot purposes.
Yeah.
Her and the like island law enforcement seemed to be people that you would actually know. So yeah, she was great.
Sonia, final thoughts on her?
She was great. I think if it wasn't for the fact that she was so vivid in the flashbacks, you would lose your impetus for watching the story, right? Like in a very silly story, like her real tragedy is kind of what anchors you and sort of keeps you going. I also really liked how many times they positioned her as kind of like a young Nicole Kidman, not just because Tag slept with her, but also because they have a little bit of a similar build, and also she's like magnetic and she draws people towards her, and maybe she would have had so much to say or do or be. I was a little bit sad that we had to say goodbye to her the very last moment of the miniseries, which ends with Amelia back at her Central Park zoologist job, was so disappointing to me, partly because it ends with Greer, like, I guess it just sort of seemed like, oh, everything's okay now. And I was like, I don't know how everything could possibly be okay after Nicole Kidman's written a book about her, what, gambling brother or something? Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it was just a little bit flat. And without her, the show really lost its energy.
Yep, I agree.
It is time to go around the dial. Our first stop, as always, with Tara.
So Adam Sandler's last stand-up special, which was hilariously called 100% Fresh, came out on Netflix in 2018. And after years of movies like The Ridiculous Six and Jack and Jill and The Grown-Ups Duology, I think expectations were low. But then it got really great reviews for how low-key and goofy it was. We watched it. It was pure silliness. It was very good. So it was a joy this weekend to remember Adam Sandler's new stand-up special had also just come out in August, and we watched it and we loved it. And if you had read that this special was directed by Josh Safdie, who previously worked with Sandler on Uncut Gems, and worried it was going to be more of an art house affair, that is kind of true. It is filmed in a comedy club where stuff keeps going wrong, like the monitors don't work, possibly because the computer they're connected to is still running Windows 95. There's a hole in the stage under his accompanist. A fight breaks out in the audience. But of course, all of that is fake, including the club itself, which looks kind of weird because it's a set. I thought Uncut Gems was great. I also think this indie bullshit is very unnecessary because the material is so stupid and good. Sandler's not really doing anything that hangs together around a single theme. Before this, that night, we watched Langston Kerman's new special, Bad Poetry, also on Netflix, which does hang together around a theme. His material of having taught high school and the students that he still hates is extremely good. But
wow,
in Love You, as in 100% Fresh, it's just little joke premises interspersed with comedy songs. Barely. They're usually just like a verse and then a punchline that are also short and stupid, which I love. It's like a sketch on I Think You Should Leave that's only 2 minutes long because it doesn't need to be longer. There's one joke about being at the airport when a stranger asked him to watch his bag that as I was watching it, I thought I would clip for this, but then it just kept going. It might be the longest gag in the special. But the payoff is hilarious. Other times he'll tell a story like about something that happened at the gym at the Y and then say he came home and talked to his dog about it and just matter-of-factly has the dog responding in a very magical, realist way, but also like, who cares? Obviously, all these stories are fake. The most sentimental bit is the closer, but if you get to it and it's too corny for you, you can turn it off. It's a very funny special, laughed a lot. Try to tune out the pretension that Josh Softy introduces, and it's powerfully dumb in the best way. Dave, you also watched this. What were your thoughts?
Are we supposed to believe Rob Schneider is supposed to be the closer in this Adam Sandler vehicle? No. Do it again. But otherwise, it was very funny.
So for my plug, I reviewed a show, the newest addition to the Fox Animation Domination lineup, which is called Universal Basic Guys. That I was very cool on for most of the season. They gave us all 13 episodes of season one, and it wasn't until like episode 11 that I was like, okay, I understand what this is trying to do now, which is
to stick with it for the first 11.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to recommend, but then when the rest of the reviews came out, I was like, oh, everyone else didn't really like this. It's possible no one got to that episode, or I was just so worn down by the time it aired. Who knows? It's a show that got better the more I watched of it. Your mileage may vary, but you can read my review. We will link it in the show notes.
All right, Sonia, what have you been watching recently?
My husband and I recently started rewatching BoJack Horseman, partly, I think, because it was the 10th anniversary. But I think also we sort of missed it. I spent so much time watching BoJack Horseman not that long ago, but because the passage of time has gotten really borked for me, I feel like I don't remember anything that happened, and also that it is very contemporary still. Like, it feels very fresh. And I miss things that feel like they're doing some sort of like modern humor or modern commentary, because a lot of stuff that I'm watching or seeking out, the comedies, like, almost, it's like sort of abstract, like, or it's in like this like sitcom universe or something. BoJack's is so continues to feel so relevant to me, and I think all of the stuff that it's skewered about celebrity culture is even only more relevant now. So it's been fun to go back, because also the first season is, it's a little rough. The first few episodes are introducing a lot of stuff that is really confusing and weird. If you are not familiar with the show, which why would you be if you're just starting? But it's also been fun to revisit some of the early introductions of characters like Sarah Lynn and seeing even then like what was sort of seeded there. So yeah, it's been fun. We did get to watch one of our favorite episodes, which is when Diane's father dies unexpectedly and she has to go back to Massachusetts to see her family. And they walk in and her horrible brothers are all sitting on the couch. And BoJack Horseman insists that he has seen Ben Affleck eat grapes. And their mother says from the kitchen, "You don't eat grapes." it's a really great moment.
Awesome. All right, you're busy on internet. Where can people find you if they want to read more from you?
That's a great question. I locked my Twitter account, but mm-hmm. you can request it if you are familiar with my name. You can find it and request it. Not to digress on this, but I locked it because like having a public Twitter account is like not worth the drama anymore. Mm. from behind my paywall, it's not a paywall, behind my subscriber wall, I'm still bullshit posting about some things I care about. It's been a little freeing to not have to write about things because then I can just not care about a bunch of new stuff. Yep. As a result, I haven't seen a bunch of new stuff, which is also a little disorienting, but a little freeing too. People keep talking about industry. I'm like, I don't care. You don't have to make me care. I'm not going to watch it. Yeah. I don't want to know about those people. I don't want to know what they think about. I'm like, this is fine. It's just not up to me. It's great.
We've been banging on that for a few weeks now. So welcome.
I saw a headline this week that was like, so-and-so finally peed on so-and-so other character. I was like, this is the show? Like, not to kink shame.
Wow.
But like, pass?
I need that Succession real bad. Give me the industry.
God bless, if that's your show. Sorry.
All right. So go to Twitter, figure out where she is, and then request the secret password, and you're in.
Hell yeah.
Sarah.
Okay. Speaking of people peeing on stuff, The Challenge, season 40, Eras. I had missed the last few seasons, I think. This is the thing about The Challenge. It is so unapologetically A, itself, and B, for its fans, and not trying really to pick up new ones or even necessarily remind the old ones that it's happening, that I don't think it does a great job of alerting folks to new seasons because it doesn't have to or care. It's also basically not streaming post-broadcast anywhere but the MTV app. I mean, I think it's on Fubo, but on like a 10-day delay. Same difference for most people. Like, do you know how hard it is to get people to believe you that Fubo is a thing that is real? Yeah. It's difficult.
I saw Fubo in the closet and Fubo smiled at me.
Don't say Fubo, it's Sunday. It just seems weirdly off model for a network so closely tied to the youths and how they consume things to be like, let's put it on a Fubo. But Viacom's going to Viacom, I guess. In any event, this season has split the contestants into four eras, shocker, corresponding to chronological blocks of seasons. So you are getting a ton of fan favorites and, of course, anti-favorites / love to hates. But of course, The Challenge only ever gestures at making it a straightforward competition, lards the rules with more and more Calvin Ball exceptions and codicils to create or aggravate resentments, and prioritize the social game, by which I mean intoxicated screaming in each other's faces from a distance of 1.5 to 2 inches, and it drags out every episode with endless announcements and replays of replays while TJ laughs and blah, 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 blah. But the thing is, it works because it never changes. It has been this for decades. You know exactly what to expect and when. You know when to pay attention and when you can mute it to focus on a text thread. And honestly, if you put the captioning on, it's just as good. Overlapping shouting, more vomiting. I got what I needed. And after all these years, when certain stupid things happen, I know I can open a window and hear, faintly, from wherever he may be in the world, and oh, for fuck's sake, from Mr. Joe Reed, because I know he is also watching, and it warms the heart. Anyway, it is airing Tuesdays on MTV, and apparently there's an app and a Fubo that smiled at Dave that you can also watch it on at some point, if that's a thing that you have in your life. The other thing is, just wait for the whole season to rack up and then watch it in like a weekend. That's the way to do it. Or wait for the reunions. Here's a thing that I have in my life right now. It is a foster cat.
Ah.
Her name is Silk, and she has very big paws and a floofy tail. If you would like to see this cuddle bug or investigate adopting her, if you're in the tri-state area, head to instagram.com/bookstorecats. That is the foster organization that I'm working with. You can also donate money for the rescue and foster placement work that Amanda does at Bookstore Cats, or to an animal rescue that is closer to you. I would make a joke about throwing a sawbuck into the will this cat become yet another foster fail pool that my husband is running, but that's probably a sucker bet. So save your money and give it to a rescue org. And we will also link in the show notes some rescue organizations that might be near you. There's a listing on Petfinder.
Sarah's house, where the cats do the math. Mm-hmm. All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great in the week to follow. This Friday on Extra Extra Hot Great, it is In Vogue with an I, not with an E. That would be a different show. The 90s. It is a Hulu doc series. And what it is about quickly? Quickly?
I think it's about Vogue in the 90s.
Perfect. You get what's on the tin.
Yep.
And then right here on EHG Prime next week, it is High Potential. And we welcome back Christina Tucker for that one. If you're interested in Extra Extra Hot Great, don't forget to join the club and get all those goodies.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It is time for the canon. Presenting this week is Julie. Take it away, Julie.
I am here to praise Mr. Jonathan Groff. He may have just won a Tony, but he is seriously underappreciated outside of the world of theater. I have no idea why no one talks about either looking or his performance in it. Maybe I'm just 10 years too late, so I'm here to do it now. Looking is a show that interweaves multiple plot lines of three main characters, best friends, gay men living in San Francisco. You've seen shows about a bunch of friends in their late 20s or early 30s hanging out in a big American city, loving and living, and that pretty well sums up the logline for Looking. It's such a well-established setup for a TV show that some of the plots seem a little too familiar. But the show is not only greater than the sum of its seemingly hackneyed parts, but it's also winking at how much we've been spoon-fed heterosexual romantic TV tropes and gender norm friendships, that we not only accept them, but expect them. And so Looking is going to have a bit of fun with it. Case in point, Season 1, Episode 5, Looking for the Future. This one focuses on Jonathan Groff's Patrick and his budding relationship with Richie, played by Raul Castillo. It's what I like to call a quiet episode, my favorite kind, where there's no major plot drama, and thus we get a chance to get to know the characters. As I've argued in the past, these episodes are even more canon-worthy than the heavy plot-driven episodes, because they do so much with relatively little. The setup of this episode is simply that Patrick and Richie play hooky for the day. I'd like to start with the scene setting and the cinematic way the director depicts San Francisco. So it's going to be a while before you hear any clips. There's a naturalistic lived-in vibe to the apartments and the restaurants. Nothing looks staged. It's not the hipster Greenpoint of Girls or the bougie West Village of Sex and the City. It looks real. And a lot of that has to do with the dreamy lens the director casts on the city. Everything is cool blues, a little hazy, a little gritty. This is going to sound a bit insane, but the wide city shots bring to mind how the Impressionists captured industrializing Paris in the late 19th century, and that associated promise of hope and marvel of change. Here it's the 2010s, pre-Bro in a Vest San Francisco, but one newly liberated again, thanks to the legalization of gay marriage that happened the year this season was made. That same lens is acutely trained on depicting sex that looks unvarnished and intimate. I spent a lot of time thinking about what's so affecting about it. After Patrick decides to forego work, he goes back to bed with Richie. We see them experimenting, getting to know each other, and figuring out what the other one likes. It's more graphic than most other shows of this genre, or maybe not, and I just don't happen to watch those shows, and it doesn't feel like the actors even know the camera is there. It's not exactly sexy. Instead, the sex is choreographed to show the nature of their evolving relationship. The director uses close-ups rather than medium shots, with sheets artfully covering their bodies. You hear all the noises, and you see every expression that flits across Jonathan Groff's face, like every twitch, smirk, and grimace, and his pleasure and discomfort with losing control. It also looks like it's shot in natural light, which it probably isn't, but that's some good work from the lighting crew. It's a tour de force that captures Patrick's character, his unease with who he is and what he wants, his anxieties and fear, and how he's learning to trust. He looks alternatively dorky and hot. When people scoff at the idea that actors are brave, I would show them this scene. Because the idea of a great first date isn't exactly genre-breaking, the dialogue and chemistry has to be so powerful you don't even realize you've seen some version of this before. Here, there's an incredibly charming exchange of the two men post-coitus at a diner. Clip one.
Oh my God. They've got Goonies cards.
Really?
Yeah, that's like my favorite movie of all time.
I never saw it.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I was in love with Sean Astin as a kid. Come on, One-Eyed Willie, Chunk. Hey, you guys. You'd have to see the movie to get how incredible that impression was.
That's pretty adorable.
Thank you.
I'm gonna get you one.
No, they're $5.
$5 for 20-year-old gum?
Jeez. Look, that was the guy. That's the picture the guy was just doing, though.
You have a weird ear like this. That's the face you made this morning.
Oh my God, okay. You can't tell me that little boy is not completely hot. I wanted to make out with him so bad when I was younger.
I used to have braces like that when I was little.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Let me see your teeth.
No.
Why?
I don't like them. They used to call me el dientes when I was little.
They did? Oh no, now you have to show me.
No.
Come on, smile. Come on, show me those pearly whites.
No.
Give me a smile, come on.
No.
Oh, see? You have beautiful teeth. You need to smile more often.
I'll try.
Okay.
What?
I don't know. Look what we're finding out about each other. Neither of us has AIDS. You don't like your teeth. You have bad taste in movies.
I don't.
You do.
Richie takes Patrick to one of his favorite childhood haunts, the planetarium. I'm not even sure where it is. Berkeley? Oakland? San Francisco? It's a cheesy idea for a date. And again, you sort of feel like you've seen this one before. And then comes this moment. Clip two.
What?
This is sort of like when Ross took Rachel on their date.
Oh my God, it totally is. I want to be Ross.
You mean Rachel?
No, you're the one that's crazy into hair and I'm the geek.
Yeah, but I thought, you know, she's kind of like the boss, which is kind of like the top.
Okay, then yeah, I want to be her.
That's what I thought.
Because you wouldn't let me fuck you.
Yeah, well.
That's kind of a surprise, to be honest.
Oh my God. Why does everybody think that? What is it about my ass that screams out I want to be fucked?
You don't need to be ashamed.
Gee, I'm not ashamed.
Whatever. It's totally fine to be not into it.
No, it's not that I'm not into it. I'm not sure I like it very much. I mean, it feels kind of weird.
Weird how?
Well, I can get it in, but pretty much as soon as it's in, I'm like, take it out, take it out, take it out, take it out, take it out.
Do you think you'd be embarrassed if your parents thought you were a bottom?
No. No.
Okay.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
But that's all. You have bottom shame?
Oh my God, I think you're right.
I think so.
Why? What are you...
Those terms are for people on websites. How do you know what you're into with a guy sexually until you're with them?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you gotta be adaptable. Otherwise, you're gonna miss out.
I do hate to miss out.
That being said, I probably usually am Rachel.
No, I knew it. You, Rachel. Wait, which one is that again? I forget. Oh, right. She's the boss. She's the top. She's the top. Right. Well, good to know.
We all use TV characters as shorthand to discuss real life. And here we see two TV characters, Patrick and Richie, take the most prototypical, heterosexual, will-they-or-won't-they TV couple in Ross and Rachel as a way to communicate about tops and bottoms and those attendant stereotypes. I mean, it's both hilarious and ingenious. The episode ends with them back where they started, in bed, at the end of that great first date, with the payoff of all that trust building and opening up in a sweet and funny and, dare I say, sexy final scene. Regardless of how the committee votes on this episode, I do encourage everyone to go back and watch Looking and discover its aching, vulnerable beauty, its funny, silly, and sexy moments, and a pre-Tony-winning Jonathan Groff, who gives the performance of a lifetime.
Thank you, Julie. Sonia, you picked this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
Thank you, Julie, for a great case for Looking for the Future to be in the canon. Yeah, I was going to comment on the same topic that Julie brings up, which is just that so much of this episode, which is a charming first date episode, sort of, is about having butt sex, which I think is like a really challenging thing to bring out of the realm of comedy and into the realm of intimate romance. I was a big fan of Andrew High's Looking. And I think this episode really features some of the things that he's so great at, which is showing us these moments of incredibly beautiful intimacy between people who are meeting kind of on this plane of dating or being potentially interested in dating each other in this place. I also think that there's something that is a little bit dated about this too now, because this was all This discourse took place before the advent of PrEP in the gay community. So PrEP, I mean, anyone can take it, and it prevents you, the person who's taking it, from contracting HIV, which has really changed the landscape, obviously, of being able to be romantic with people who are HIV positive. And HIV is the specter haunting this. I mean, in a sense, it's the specter haunting, you know, the modern sort of like cool gays of San Francisco are to some degree haunted by this crisis that ended so recently, but was so devastating. Jonathan Groff's character brings it up a couple of times in the episode about how his identity, which is very new for him, his sexuality, which is new for him, is tied up in this fear. So I think that's another reason that I really enjoyed revisiting this episode, is seeing this conversation that is now kind of in its twilight, because the way that we think we have so much less to fear from contracting this disease now that we have these medicines. And then at the same time, like, even with this fear hanging over them, there is so much sweetness between these two characters. I think Groff on TV is one of the hardest Groffs to sell, though. I think I don't know what it is. Like, I watched him on Boss, okay, with Kelsey Grammer on Stars. I watched him in Mindhunter, of course. Mm-hmm. Saw him in Glee when he was in Glee for a bit. And I would say that's probably, you get the broadest sense of what he can do on Glee. Theater is really where he has been such a, like, a force, you know, and like the original role for King George and Hamilton is going to be like the top line of his resume, I think, for top line of his obit, whatever it is. But like, aside from all of that, he's this incredibly charming guy. And I think on screen, that charm is sometimes all you see, and you don't get the vulnerability and the sort of like frenetic energy underneath. But in this episode, you can sort of see some of the layers come back. And then part of what makes that so work so well is that Groff and Raul Castillo are such a great combo on screen. Mm-hmm. I think Raul is like the sweetest, cutest guy. I love him. I love him as Richie in this episode. I have not seen that actor get the role, like the more sort of like leading roles that I would like since Looking and this show was on the air. I think here you can really see just like what a genuine romantic lead he is. And the two of them have this incredible, like they're both types, like they talk about Ross and Rachel. But again, like it's scrambled. It's a rom-com, but it's not your heterosexual rom-com. The roles and the conversations and the comedy all arise from different places. I mean, I love Looking. I love that this episode encapsulates so much of what makes that show great. And it's also just like really lovely to witness this like moment in TV where we actually did care a lot about showcasing different perspectives. And like, this was one of those moments where we actually accomplished it. I sort of miss that these days. My vote is yes, canonical for various good reasons.
Thank you so much. I'm going to go next. I love looking back at, I mean, Julie mentions Girls, that looking at the moments in HBO history when they were like sort of in betweeny and just trying stuff out, because that's when, mm-hmm. I mean, Girls was sort of that too. Looking was, you know, Flight of the Conchords came about in that period, like after Sopranos, but you know, so did like John from Cincinnati. Like it's just always interesting to look back at the HBO shows that like never totally hit. And this one, I think, had a fair run. It had two seasons and a movie, which is more than a lot of shows get. But yeah, Julie's right. Like what's fascinating about this is seeing the specificity turn universal. In order to sell this relationship, selling is the wrong word. In order for us to believe this relationship, like we need to have these moments of extreme specificity, some of which are just about what it's like to be two men dating in San Francisco in the teens. And some of them are universal, like, you know, when after Patrick's had a shower and then he hears the bass start up and goes, oh, please, God, no. Like this moment early in a relationship where like, oh, God, no, he's a guitar guy. Like, you don't know which way that's going to go. That's so funny. And like, you know, having the sex conversation at a diner, like that's universal, too, wherever you are on the sexual spectrum, like. I loved looking back also at this show from the vantage point of like post All of Us Strangers, which is from the same creator, Andrew Hay. You can watch All of Us Strangers now. It's on Hulu. It's a feature film that was out late last year. That's hard to describe. Just if you had any interest at all in Looking, you should watch it if you haven't already. But like Sonia said, like this feels dated in its way. And All of Us Strangers kind of like is telling a different story about several different times in queer history and being at different points on that spectrum, too, that, you know, I just appreciate how this creator is always sort of refining his lens on his characters. They always sort of feel like they're reflecting like this extremely specific time in a way that feels, like I said, specific, but also universal. Like this, this is not a typical episode. It's, you know, it's only two of the characters and the ensemble, which all of whom were great. And I was especially sad that Dave didn't get to watch a Bakula episode because he's definitely in the ones around this. But this was a fascinating document. And now it is canonical that Rachel is a top, which I think we all instinctively knew. But now it's been established with the force of law. So, Julie, yeah, thank you for this presentation. It was great to revisit this episode. Sarah.
I agree that the presentation was excellent. And I also liked that Julie talked about some of the production and technical aspects. I did have in my notes that, call San Francisco a character in a television show is like annoying, but also sometimes you have to. And I think in a case like this, in this particular document, it is true. And it was sort of nice to get that extremely like almost tactile sense of the light in San Francisco, which does have that like pale green, muggy, gritty way about it, like she said. And that these apartments did look lived in and looked like the size of apartments that just folks could afford in town. So I liked that. Richie, that actor should be in everything, should be, I mean, so much charisma. And the two of them together were, they had great chemistry. And it was also extremely believable in that sort of like info dump early in the relationship where it's like, let's just throw everything in, like onto plates and see if it cooks, right? So, you know, and then they're like at the planetarium, which again, I am a well-established basic, but if that's Richie's like, it's a surprise. And then you're at the planetarium, like, let's get married. You and me, Richie. I'm into it. I love you and your teeth. I also liked that, I think Sonia makes such a good point about the sort of trapped in amber quality of some of the conversations. But I appreciated that other parts of, or like continuations of that same conversation in this relationship, which is going to be what was your coming out journey and what was your support, that these are two pretty different paths to it. The pea flag parents thing is, I mean, it really is a thing. And that Richie's sort of like, I don't understand what that is. And watching Jonathan Groff's character, Patrick, just sort of like try to work through for himself, like, how do I actually explain this? And then coming up against the fact that he wishes that he had P-Flag parents. But those little shorthands and those conversations also, I thought were well done and important. The whole like thing with Richie Signora and like the eggs, and they're just looking at each other like, we should leave. And then Morrissey is playing at the end. I don't know. It was really a just well executed and sort of like trim and complete 27 minutes that seemed to contain more, but last less time. So that's good TV. And that's what we like to talk about. So, Julie, thank you very much. Dave.
Yeah, good call, Julie. This was charming first date episode. I have some notes about the first date. My notes were just little snippets of things that happened on the first date. And I just realized it kind of reads like something from Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. But we'll go. Eagle tat, butt guitar, finger brush, good luck charm, armpit, blow job, diner food, Goonies, cars, Peter camp, hand job mess. Blah, 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 blah. So, okay, beautiful. Here's some notes on the date. Goonies does not stand up to the test of time. If you are of the age in which you love Goonies, I implore you, think twice about rewatching it as an adult.
Leave it back there.
Yeah, leave 100%. It back there. Get the cards.
Yeah, we watched something like recently where people were talking about you don't do Chunk impressions anymore, and now I can't remember what it was, but it was like within the last month. Might have been a Taskmaster. Yeah. Anyway, proceed.
Yeah, I didn't need to see Sloth or Chunk orgasm face.
Sloth, that's who it was. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to a planetarium as part of a date, I mean, if you're not seeing a laser show set to 70s prog rock, I don't know what you're doing, guys. They eat hot dogs in the park and they're not putting the right condiments on their hot dogs. There's like just ketchup though. And onions on one of them, which why?
Some gross, people are disgusting. Like that.
It made me hungry.
Mm-hmm. Cold weather beach walks are the worst thing in the world. Don't do that.
No. Hot weather beach walks. Worse. Just my opinion.
I'd rather be hot on the beach because then you can jump in the water.
We're describing the split in California, like literally just the two of you. It's just hot beach, cold beach.
So those are my notes on their day, but watching it all play out, notes aside, was really great. And it's nice to have such an efficient telling of a first day story in a post everything about gay relationships need to be tragic world. And you know, that is, I think, what this episode does really well as well. So let's put this to the official vote. Sonia, you've already put your vote in, but make it official. Canon worthy or not?
I would say it's canon worthy. And I'm going to add that seeing San Francisco in the transitional state between whatever it was before big tech swooped in was another nice little artifact of this episode. Canon worthy for me.
All right. Sarah.
Yes, canon worthy for me as well.
Tara.
I'm going to give some further reading, not reading, watching. Also, both on Hulu, if you love Raul Castillo, and we all do. He had a great arc in the first season of Vita as well, and that's streaming on Hulu as well. And for a look at gay relationships in the modern day, including some prep jokes, Fire Island, streaming on Hulu as well. Really fun. This was great. Great presentation. Great episode. Thank you, Julie. Yes.
For All me. Right. And I'll say yes for 4 out of 4. All right, that means Looking Season 1, Episode 5, Looking for the Future. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, time to discover who is our winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
I do. Our winner is Lee Daniels, one of the creators and frequent directors of the Fox show Empire. He has a new movie out on Netflix now called The Deliverance, which I haven't watched. But as part of the press tour of that, he talked about Empire and called it absolutely the worst experience. Horrible exclamation mark, but says the money was incredible. He put his kids through college. We salute him. Get that network cash. God bless.
Absolutely. And our loser of the week, Sarah.
Well, I think we all knew this was coming, both the event itself and my picking it as loser of the week, but Colon Legacy will be ending with season 3 at Freevee. Apparently, that is debuting in March of next year, and they'd better drop it on my birthday weekend. That's all I'm saying.
Speaking about things we all knew were coming, do you know what time it is?
It's game time!
Gotta be game time! It's game time.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the second game time of the season. Our scores are Tara with 0, Sarah with 0, Value Guess with 1. So Value Guess are in the driver's seat this week. And this week, we are playing TV Popularity Contest 2, the follow-up from Miles, who earns himself an extra credit. Topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store at 3methods.com. So to remind you, it's been a few weeks since we played the original. When you search a show on IMDb, you see the cast listed in credit order. You may not know, however, that will also let you resort the cast list by IMDb popularity. In this game, you will score points for identifying the IMDb's most popular actors from various TV shows. This is how it's going to work. I'm going to give you the top 4 credited actors as a clue. Any of those 4 might be on the most popular list. They may not be. In round 1, you're going to get 4 points for the most popular, 3 points for the second most popular, 2 points for the third most popular, and then 1 point for the fourth most popular actor if you named them. Everybody plays every question, so I'm going to give you the show name. We're going to have all the contestants lock in their choice, and we're going to go on the honor system that they're not going to change it when other people start talking. Now, note on the actors. We're only talking about actors that have appeared in 5 or more episodes of a show. So no like one-off gotcha. Brad Pitt being at the top of the popularity list for Friends. That will not happen here. All right, that's how it's played. We got 3 rounds, and the points value will increase with each round. So by the end of it, we're going to be talking super big points. No steel mills, no picky needed today. Let's get to it with round 1. Are we ready to play TV Popularity Contest?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Your first show, I'm going to give you the show. I want to lock in your most popular choice, is Parks and Recreation. Parks and Recreation. So you're going to pick an actor. You're just some guy in America, and you're searching IMDb. You go to Parks and Rec. Who is the most popular actor, according to IMDb, that's been in 5 or more episodes of Parks and Recreation? I said this in the pre-show. I'll say it again for the benefit of all our listeners. In the first version of this game, we learned that a lot of this came down to horn doggery. Not always, but a lot of it. So that is definitely something to be considered when you make your choice. Okay, we'll go in the same order each time just to make this easy. Sarah D. Bunting, who is your guest for Parks and Rec most popular actor?
Rob Lowe.
Tara.
I really went back and forth among him and some other people, but I'm going to say Rob Lowe as well.
And Sonia.
Oh, wow. I am going to say Chris Pratt.
Okay.
He was in the mix for me, yeah.
Me too.
Your number 1 that nobody said was Retta.
Oh, good for her.
Fuck
That's
yeah.
the correct choice, actually.
Yeah.
Love her.
Sonia gets the most points with Chris Pratt, our number 2. She gets 3 points.
Nice.
And the wrong low for both Sarah and Tara will net them 2 points. He is the third most popular. Our number 4 was Aubrey Plaza.
That was on my list. Yeah. I never would have guessed Retta was higher than Aubrey Plaza on the IMDb, whatever that is.
I mean, this changes everything. Good job, IMDb users.
It really does. And for the better, I feel.
Way to go, horny
for
guys.
Sure. Yeah.
Way to go.
All right. Good pickups, everybody. Your second show is Seinfeld. And I forgot to read the actors list in the first one. That's my bad. So here is your cast list. According to the credits, Jerry Seinfeld, Michael Richards, Jason Alexander, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is your credit order. But who is the most popular according to IMDb? Could be one of them. Could be somebody else. Five or more episodes. So when you're thinking, who has
All right, we're
locked in. Sarah D. Bunting, who is your Seinfeld actor?
I think it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
All right, Tara.
I mean, not to keep agreeing with Sarah, but I do. Julia Louis-Dreyfus for me as well.
And so
no subtime.
I'm also going to say Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
All right. You guys did not figure out who was the most popular.
So is it Wayne Knight?
I go from the bottom up.
Oh.
Your fourth most popular was Wayne Knight.
Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Your third, Patrick Warburton.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sure.
Your second, 3 points for everybody, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. All right. Anybody want to take a second crack at the number one? I'll give you a hint. Guest star, repeated guest star. Probably just sneaking on over the five episode.
Is it Janice?
It's not Janice.
Is it?
It's a man.
Let's. Oh. Peterman?
No.
But he's got. He can't be. Yeah. He's more than five. Oh, is it? It's not Ben Stiller's dad, is it?
No, it's not. It is okay. Bryan Cranston.
Oh,
Bryan Cranston.
Yeah? Okay, that makes sense.
So you have to keep in mind, it's not this popularity in that show. It's his popularity for the whole IMDb.
Sure.
So that is one search for actor. All right.
Okay.
Your third show is Felicity. Kerry Russell, Scott Speedman, Scott Foley, Tangi Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
Mm-hmm.
Elena.
Okay.
Elena.
All right. So those are your four credits actors. Who is the most popular, though? Let's see. Hands up when you're locked in. Sarah's thinking about this one. Our Felicity expert is going through the whole show, thinking about who's on it. It's popular on IMDb. Scratching her chin, looking up to the right.
Hard pondering.
Okay. Sarah D. Bunting, who is your Felicity actor?
Tyra Banks.
Tyra Banks. Tara.
I don't think she was in more than five, was she? I'm going to say Kerry Russell.
I don't think she was either now, but had to do it.
Tara says Kerry Russell. Sonia?
I'm also saying Kerry Russell.
Okay, here are your points. No points for our number four actor, most popular, Lisa Edelstein.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Sure.
Your number three, Amy Smart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Good for her.
Your number two, 3 points for everybody who guessed Kerry Russell. And your number one most popular actor from Felicity is Rob Benedict.
What?
Again, good for him.
It's because everybody just saw his dick on that show.
That's how it works.
Huh.
Yeah.
Who? I'm not coming up with a face. I gotta look him up.
It's
Richard.
Richard
right?
Code. Yeah.
Just gonna see dicks. If you search him right now, it's just gonna be a giant dick on your phone, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. That's what I was hoping for. Oh, he's on The Boys.
Uh-huh.
He's on The Boys too. Yes. That makes
times five or more this season. Yep.
Oh, is he the multiplayer guy?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Yeah. While you deal with having dick pics on your phone, I will let you know that the next show is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. By credits, we have Charlie Day, Glenn Howerton, Rob
McElhenney.
McElhenney, thank you. Mm-hmm. And Caitlin Olson. All right. Tara's locked in. Sony's locked in. Sarah's got a face. She's not happy about it, but she's locked in. Sarah, who is your pick for the most popular actor from It's Always Sunny?
Oratory High School Zone, Danny DeVito.
Danny DeVito. All right, Tara.
I think the Ryan Reynolds halo effect from Welcome to Wrexham means it's going to be Rob McElhenney.
Okay, Rob McElhenney and Sonia.
Wow. I'm going to say Danny DeVito, but I had to stop and think about Rob McElhenney. I'm curious to see Danny DeVito's score.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you know only one person got points, and that is Tara for Rob McElhenney in the number four slot. So only 1 point there.
Okay.
Your number three most popular actor, Lance Barber. Don't know who that is. Number two, Jimmy Simpson.
Oh,
and number one,
awesome.
Caitlin Olson. Oh. Number one, Caitlin Olson.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you told, yeah. Mm.
Lance Barber, I think, played the, he was the writer from The Comeback. He was like the mean guy that she punches in the stomach. He was also the dad who dies in Young Sheldon, spoiler.
Well, he's number three, so obviously he has some dick pics out there.
Mm-hmm.
Next show, mm-hmm. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is your show. We've got Ellie Kemper, Titus Burgess, Carol Kane, Jean Krakowski. But who is the most popular actor from that show? Sarah's locked in.
Oh, wait, I just
there
remember.
Were a lot of people.
Tara's locked
a lot of people
in.
On yeah. that show.
Sonia is rubbing her eyes to make the magic happen.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Sorry. Well, it's like these years don't exist in my memory. Mm. The ones where I was writing reviews all the time, I'm like, I don't know. I had thoughts and then I vomited them out onto a document.
Yeah, and then
that
it's
is
over.
How it works.
Yep.
That's 100%.
Keep in mind, it has to be an actor that's in five or more episodes.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm in.
All right. In. All right. Sarah okay. D. Bunting, who is your pick?
Jane Krakowski.
Jane Krakowski. Tara.
Jonathan Hamilton.
Jonathan Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Sonia.
I am Ham.
All right. We've got two for Ham. Who is our number one? So 4 points for Tara and Sonia.
And whoa, yes. Awesome.
And Krakowski also points at the bottom of the list. She is fourth for 1 point. In the middle, we had Carol Kane and Ellie Kemper. So
okay.
I'm almost everybody
really
on that
happy,
list.
Really happy Carol Kane ranked. I wasn't sure she was going to. I was not sure.
Next show we're talking about is Party Down, and it's both the series and the revival.
Okay.
So all together as one. That's the way IMDb is doing it. So we got Adam Scott, Ken Marino, Ryan Hansen, Martin Starr. In the credits. But who is the most popular actor?
Oh my God.
I don't feel great about this, but I'm going to lock it in anyway.
Right, I don't either, but.
Two locked in. Sonia's scratching the back of her neck in her latest technique to make it happen. All right, everybody's locked in. Sarah, who is your choice?
Ryan Hansen.
Ryan Hansen. Tara.
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner. Sonia.
Right.
Okay. Tara's horning in on my strategy, but I'm gonna change it just for kick.
Oh, you're locked in.
I do.
We need your locked in.
I'm locked in.
Vote.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I'm locked in with Jennifer Garner. I do think it's Jennifer Garner too.
That was a very wise lock in. Not that I would have allowed it anything else because I'm a stickler for the rules. Jennifer Garner is your number one.
Woo!
So 4 points for Tara and Sonia. And we had follow-up by Lizzie Kaplan at 2, Adam Scott 3, Megan Mullally at 4. So no points for Sarah.
Oh, right. I don't remember everybody else on that show, which I did not watch.
Surprise, Kristen Bell. She was the one who was like, but maybe she wasn't in more than 2.
Last show of round one before the points will increase is Game of Thrones.
Oh, God!
We got Peter Dinklage, Lena Headey, Kit Carrington, Emilia Clarke. All right, your credit actors, but who is the most popular? I'm going to let you know something. I'm going to put this in for you. Put your hand down, Tara. I'm going to let you know. Just, you know, for fun. None of those actors are
the
mix.
It's not one of those in my mind.
Yeah. Okay.
I will also let you know, I haven't heard of two of the people on the list. That won't help anybody, but just so you know.
No, that could
remember
that
anyone's
mean
fucking name. I didn't watch that goddamn Snowy bullshit. Fine. I found an actor's name in my brain grapes. Great.
All right. Sarah and Tara are locked in. Sonia's thinking about it. Eric, everybody is locked in. Sarah D. Bunting, who is your Game of Thrones most popular actor pick?
Understanding that I understand that this is definitely wrong, but this is the actor that I could think of who was not on that list, Aidan Gillen.
All right.
Okay, he could be in there.
Tara?
No, he couldn't. He sucks.
He could. People love him, though. Pedro Pascal is my pick.
Oh.
Oh.
Sonia.
Smart.
Pedro Pascal, Tara and I are vibing.
All right. I'm here to let you know nobody got points.
No!
Nobody got points.
Oh, okay, great.
Everyone who didn't pick Pedro Pascal is wrong.
It feels wrong.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Was he in more than five?
I don't know.
He was in a whole season, I think, but I didn't watch that show.
He just shows up and like teaches somebody swordplay and they get stomped on by somebody else. So I think he might be in 2 or 3 episodes.
It's a spear. He's from Dorne.
Sorry. All right. Number 4.
Not even as a joke.
Nathalie Emmanuel.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Number 3, Nell Tiger Free.
Sure.
Number 2, Hannah Waddingham. Number 1, Dean Charles Chapman.
Nope.
Oh, I have no idea.
Who that is. So we better look it up or we're going to get letters. Somebody look it up as we explain round 2.
Okay.
Same type of game. You don't get any credit people, though. You have to just go into it blind. Not a big problem, I think, for this crowd. And the points are all doubled. So we start at 8, we end with 2 for round 2, depending on where you pick in the mix.
All right, he
Dean
is cute.
Charles Chapman was Tommen. Tommen Lannister.
Okay.
He played two roles, it says.
Oh, no, Tommen Baratheon, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He played two roles. Incredible.
People are screaming at you right now, Sonya, just so you know.
I'm sorry.
He was the mountain's long-lost son.
They know we didn't watch the show or care about it. Give me a break.
When the Hound of the Mountain made a baby, it was this guy. Mm-hmm. Round 2, your first show is Gilmore Girls. All right, so I'm not going to read you the actors, but I think you probably can guess. But who is indeed the most popular actor from Gilmore Girls that has been in 5 or more episodes?
What is that guy's name?
Sarah's thinking. She's got a pick, but only has a visual. We do have to answer this question eventually.
I know. Why can't I think of this guy's name? Oh my God, Mademoiselle Caroline is going to murder me.
Okay.
Oh, that guy.
All right. Mm. We're locked in. Sarah D. Bunting, we're all just waiting to hear who this is. Are we just going to get a description of his face, or do you have a name?
Well, it's a very big forehead, but I could not pull the name, so I'm just going to have to answer Milo Ventimiglia.
All right.
Duda.
I think you're probably right with your pick. I'm not going to say it, though, because I am honorable, and I am locked in with Lauren Graham.
All right. Sonia?
Melissa McCarthy.
God damn it!
Sonia is the only one with points. At the number 4, we have Arielle Kibble. Kibble?
Uh-huh.
Kibble. Melissa McCarthy is our number 3.
For how many points is that?
So it's 4 points. Okay. So it's doubled the first round. So it's 8-6-4-2. Kristen Ritter is our number 2. Chad Michael Murray is our number 1.
You were trying to think of Jared Padalecki, Sarah.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so sorry, Supernaturalians. I just blanked.
All right. Our next one's going to be interesting because it is an animated show. It is Archer. So we're talking about the voice actors from Archer. Who is the most popular on IMDb?
Oh, God. Okay. Okay.
All right. Everybody's locked in. Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm living in the world that should be and not that is. Jessica Walter.
All right. Tara?
Aisha Tyler.
Sonia?
Kristen Schaal.
All right. We only have one hit. Number 4, Patton Oswalt. Number 3, Christian Slater. Number 2, Judy Greer. Number 1, Aisha Tyler.
Oh, nice. Way to go, Tara.
For 2 points, right?
So that's 8?
Wow, no, that's for number 1. That's 8 points.
Oh. Nice. Christian Slater, huh?
Yeah.
He's not many episodes.
All right, Mad Men. Mad Men is next. Most popular actor has been in 5 or more episodes of Mad Men. We've already had Jon Hamm at the top of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but did he make the top of the Mad Men list? We're gonna find out.
It's a lot of people on that show.
A lot of people. Sarah, Tara are locked in. Sonia's still thinking, running through the... All right, everybody's locked in. Sarah D. Bunting, your Mad Men actor is...
Elizabeth Moss.
Tara?
Allison Brie.
Sonia?
Ooh, smart.
Allison Brie.
Allison Brie is on the list at the bottom, so 2 points for you two. Number 3, Linda Cardellini.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Number 2, Christina Hendricks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. Number 1, not Jon Hamm. Who? Second guess is just for the fun of it.
John Slattery?
Rosemary DeWitt is your number 1.
It's all the girlfriends. Okay. That's the hardest part of that show is ranking which girlfriend is most horny for the IMDb, you know, meter.
That was definitely horn dog vote for there. Only Murders in the Building is our next show. Only Murders in the Building. Tara, very quick with her pick here. Sonia locked in. Sarah D. Bunting. Only Murders in the Building enjoyer is now locked in. And your vote is what, Sarah?
Summit's own, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Tara?
I gotta go with Selena Gomez and her billion Instagram followers.
And Sonia, what do you got?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep is on the list, but let's go with the 4th one. Carla Delevingne.
Delevingne.
Yeah, sure. Meryl Streep is our number 3. number three for 4 points. Paul Rudd is your number two.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Amy Ryan is your number one.
I thought about answering that.
What?
Okay.
Oh my God.
IMDb strikes again.
So 4 points for me and Sonya, and then 0 points for T-Bone?
That's right.
Correct.
That's right. Meryl Streep got 4 points. All right. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is next up. Buffy.
Okay.
Oh boy. Tara's locked in.
Is she?
Yeah.
She was.
I am.
She's okay. Back. Sonya's still pondering.
Not confident.
All right. She doesn't seem happy with her pick, but we're going ahead. Sarah D. Bunting, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Who is your actor?
Oh, now I have doubts.
Well,
fuck it. Boreanaz.
Boreanaz. All right. Tara.
I mean, I got to say it. Anthony Stewart Head. I think he's got a shot.
Mm. Sonya. Mm.
Dave's face says maybe not.
I'm not feeling good about this, but Allison Hannigan.
All right. I like that.
Yeah,
I think
that was my
fun.
Second mm-hmm. choice.
I get award mm-hmm. no points this round.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Number four, Michelle Trachtenberg.
Uh-huh. Oh, what?
Alicia Dukes in your number three slot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Sure.
Nathan Fillion, your number two.
Oh, God, of course.
Nope.
And number one, Julie Benz. Got a case of the Benz up top.
Okay. Wait, what?
Yep.
Yeah, that's...
The Dexter heads were out in force, I guess.
I was going to say, who was the woman that was dead in the whatever, got killed in the show? Spoilers. Mm. Second to last show in round two is The West Wing. The West Wing.
Now, fuck.
Walking around the halls in your mind, talking to your friend about who's the most popular actor from The West Wing. Somebody just shuffled by with a folder. They're not consequential to what's going on here. Sarah's locked in. Tara's locked in. Sonya's pondering. She's now doing the twisty chair thing. I have to say, I'm really impressed by how Sonya, with each question, has a different method to bring up the answers.
It's different really quite physical.
We really should be
accessing in the body. Or accessing different parts of my memory. Yep. They're mm-hmm. located in different parts of my body.
Yeah.
It's held. It's the mulabunda. It's held in like the, the pelvic girdle or whatever.
All right, no. I have a bad guess, but I'm going to go for it.
We'll start with Sarah.
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen is Sarah's pick. Tara's pick is?
Allison Janney.
Allison Janney. Oh, yeah. And Sonya's pick is?
Mary Louise Parker.
Okay, good. We have points now with Sonya's guess.
Oh, hell yeah!
your number four actor, Dule Hill.
Uh-huh.
Your number two actor for 4 points is Mary Louise Parker. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number two actor, Elizabeth Moss. Mm-hmm. So said, but for the wrong show. And your number one, Mr. Rob Lowe.
Oh, Rob Lowe, I thought about it, but
God
I was like, it did work the last time.
I'm telling you how angry this is making people. Last show of round two, guys, is Fargo. So Fargo, lots of seasons, lots of actors changing all the time. So, oh boy, good luck on this one.
The show, right?
Yeah, the show. Sonya's locked in.
Lots
Tara's
seasons,
locked in.
Lots of actors.
Sarah is putting her nose to her microphone in defeat.
Fighting tears of despair, but raising her hand.
All right, so everybody's locked in. Sarah, who is your Fargo actor you think is at the top of the IMDb popularity list?
Ted Danson.
Ted Danson. Tara.
Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor.
Oh, yeah,
Sonya.
Good one.
Oh, Jesse Plemons.
Jesse Plemons.
Ooh,
guess what happened again? Sonya is the only one who got points this round. Your number four actor, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Uh-huh.
Number three, Juno Temple.
Uh-huh.
Number two, Joey King, which means Sonya got an 8-point pickup
Holy
for Jesse Plemons.
Shit.
All right, that is round two. So let's
get the
moment.
Oh my God. Well, they really changed. Sarah, please fact check me. I have you with 10. Me with 27 and Sonya with 20, 35, 39.
Wow. All right.
Mine is correct. You are correct. Hold on. Correct.
All right. Nicely done. All right. So keep in mind, round three, there's only one show in round three, but all the point values are doubling from the double.
Okay.
So.
Oh, man.
I'm
16, gonna, I'm, 8, 4. No, wait, 4. I don't know what it was.
I'm scared. If it's, I mean, if this wasn't Game of Thrones, I'm scared to think what this could possibly
4,
be.
8, 16, 32, right?
No. We went one
double from the double. 4 to 8. Sorry,
it'll
no.
end at 16. 4, oh 8, 12, God. 16. Math is hard.
Majors.
We just watch TV. We're not supposed to be figuring out the mathematical possibilities.
I have
of
a calculator
universe.
In my pocket all the time. My teachers said I wouldn't. They were wrong.
4, 8, 12, 16 are point values. All right. Your show is Law and Order Mothership.
No!
So the original Law and Order.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but that includes the current iteration, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right.
The original the and the revival.
Show. Oh, yeah. Great.
Fuck.
So a lot of people have been on that show. We're looking for actors that have been on 5 or more episodes of that show.
That could include all the fucking guest stars. It could be Dennis O'Hare.
Yeah, everybody's really, who's that sexy Dennis O'Hare?
Some people are. He's been in a lot of seasons of American Horror Story.
It's not Dennis O'Hare.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
Law and Order Mothership. Top 4 actors.
I can't believe I'm going to lock in, but I am.
In play.
This is such a risk.
Everybody but Sarah's locked in, but Sarah has the most institutional knowledge. So
that's why she's tortured right now.
There's 2 of our boys right there.
Neither of whom I'm going to guess.
All right, everybody's locked in. So, like 16 points for the number one answer here. This could change a lot. Sarah D. Bunting, who is your Law & Order actor pick?
Even if I get this right, I can't even catch Tara for second place. So, I'm just going to let it rip because I think she's on a show right now and she's hot as hell. Alana De La Garza.
Oh,
all right,
yeah.
Tara.
This is largely based on his having been on Burn Notice as well, but I'm going to say Jeffrey Donovan.
Oh, okay.
Don't
and
hate
Sonya.
That
oh, man. I'm going to say Benjamin Bratt. Oh. He was on Law & Order, right? He's a hottie.
He's so foxy.
Yeah. Man, remember Miss Congeniality? All right, so that's my guy. Yeah.
Oh, God. So smart.
All right. Okay. Here's how it's playing out. We're going to go from 4 to 1.
Okay.
In this big point value round. Your
oh
number
God.
4 actor, just for guessing number 4, you could have got 4 points. J.K. Simmons.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, are you serious or are you J.K.?
Yeah.
Get
out
of here.
3.
Yes.
Diane Weiss.
I almost said her.
Fuck. God
damn
it. Number 2.
Yeah.
Tony Goldwyn.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And number 1, which would have been the 16-point grab. And why stop the trend now, Sonya? She got it. Benjamin Bratt for 16 points.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And that is regulation, guys. That is regulation.
Oh, my God.
I think we know
that
who
was fucking awesome.
But let's make it official.
Oh, my God. Shit.
Guys, I won something.
Boom.
Handily.
All right. What's the score?
Okay. Sarah D. Bunting finished with 10. I finished with whatever I said before, 27.
27.
Sonya is our victress with 55.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Decisive.
That's
gorgeous.
Amazing. That's more than double your score.
Incredible.
In second place.
Great
Nicely
work.
Done.
Yes.
All right.
I'm truly honored. Thank you.
Gorgeous.
We don't need it for points, but we'll play it for a steel meal. I got the one would have been the tiebreaker. Let's just play it. Okay. It is Beverly Hills 90210. I have the top 22 actors, so I can probably figure out where you are in the listing. But everybody lock in, and whoever gets the highest will get a free steel meal for future use. We didn't use them today because of this game, but in the future, we do use them. All right, Tara's locked in. Everybody's locked in. Sonya doesn't seem happy with it. But let's start with Sonya first. Let's see if she can guess the number one again.
I'm worried I don't even have the right show, but I'm going to say Luke Perry.
All right. Luke Perry
he was on
is
okay.
on the list.
Quite famously.
Okay, great.
Hillary Swank?
Hillary Swank is on the list.
Okay.
Sarah.
Shannon Doherty.
Shannon Doherty, I'm going to assume, is on the list.
May she rest.
Shannon Doherty is our lowest.
Oh,
fuck this.
Not in our hearts.
Fuck you, America.
Luke Perry, number 10, mm-hmm. and Swank is our highest at number 3. Our 4 was Casper Van Dien, ooh, Hilary Swank, Dina Meyer, Tiffany Thiessen was our number one.
Oh, sure. Tiffany.
He's got the boobs. The boobs, guys. The boobs.
Yeah.
All right, but today definitely belonged to Value Guess. Nice win, Sonia.
Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you.
Valued guest.
Ooh, and thank you, Miles, for that game. That is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I wish sometimes we had a video version of this podcast because that was some great thinky acting from everybody involved. That is it for this episode of Extra Hot. Great. We danced around the rich folks murder mystery, The Perfect Couple, before going around the dials with stops at Adam Sandler, Love You, BoJack Horseman, and The Challenge : Eras. Julie made the successful case to put Looking in the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sonia was a winner of this week's Game Time from Miles. Next up, it's In Vogue, the 90s on Extra Extra Hot Great, and return to EAC Prime next week for High Potential. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Is this because she's a lesbian?
Sarah D. Bunting.
That's the face you made this morning.
And Sonia Saraya.
Second game of Pill Roulette today.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm not good with silences, just so you know. I went on a date once with a guy and we ran out of things to say before the appetizers and it was horrible.
So we're doing good?
Yeah. It's much better than that.
I've also used the bathroom at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast gift shop.
Nice.
Very big.
Awesome.
Can I just cut that out for the end of the show? Just you saying that one little snippet?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
For the end of every show, I'm here for you.